Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Previously On Watchmen in association with Sky Atlantic, taking you through some of the best and most complex television in the world. Everybody, how are you doing? It's Jamie East here with episode two of Previously On's look at Watchmen. Welcome. Hopefully, by now you will be up to speed. You will have seen episode one and episode two of Watchmen. The first episode went out, I think, a couple of weeks ago now, and episode two was I'm recording this on Tuesday morning, so it went out to you guys last night. There's a lot of stuff to get through. Previously, in the first episode, when I was discussing what we thought was likely to happen with Watchmen as a whole, with my good friend Andrew Harrison, we were kind of left with a few teasing glimpses and kind of theorising about how much the comic books were going to influence Damon Lindelof's decisions about where he was taking the series. We're now two episodes in, and I tell you what, it's building up to be an absolute cracker, isn't it? You know, I feel pleasantly surprised. I was not expecting it to be quite as intriguing or as action-packed, given the fact that the source material is relatively character-driven and quite slightly navel-gazing. Later on in this episode, I'm dead pleased to announce that Regina King is going to come on and have a chat all about Watchmen. Very, very excited that I managed to sit in a posh hotel room with her last week, and she was on top form. But before we get to that, shall I give you a bit of a brief recap as to where we are in the Watchmen saga? Yeah? So episode one was entitled Watch Over This Boy. It kicked off with the young boy in the cinema in 1921 watching that Western. And we immediately saw the alternate world kind of merging with the real world, with the true incidents of the Tulsa race riots, kind of showing you that we're heading towards something quite prescient in terms of today's politics. This world set 30 years after the events of the 1986 kind of Watchmen comic. The policemen are wearing the yellow masks to protect their identities. There is still kind of like squid falling from the sky, which is a reference to the comic books as well. Robert Redford, yes, the Robert Redford, has been president for three decades. Dr. Manhattan, who is the actual only real superhero with actual superhero powers, is still on Mars. He abandoned Earth and went to Mars previously. Rorschach, who you won't know if you've not read the comics, but was a character in the original Watchmen with the white masks, with the Rorschach symbols, with the Rorschach drawing over the front of it, who is a pretty evil character, as Andrew Harrison pointed out in the previous episode of Previously On. He's now become a martyr or a symbol for white supremacy and the far-right terrorist organization, who are calling themselves the Seven Cavalry in Watchmen. So they're wearing masks, the cops are having to wear masks to hide their identity. It's all pretty grim. The police of Tulsa are led by Captain Judd Crawford, that's played by Don Johnson, and he has got kind of like a gang of vigilantes, would you say? There's Angela Abar, who's played by Regina King, who is a baker by day, but by night is the fantastic Sister Knight. She, along with her fellow vigilante detectives, Red Scare, who's the kind of amazing kind of, I guess, Eastern European fella in the red balaclava, and Looking Glass, they are kind of tasked with digging into all of this this bubbling, simmering racial hatred and tension that is coming over. Looking Glass interrogated a 7th Cavalry member in that cool pod thing, which is clearly just an elaborate kind of lie detector. But the first episode is very much universe building and introducing us to all the different characters. However, Damon Lindelof did have something up his sleeve, and we were left with a properly good, not cliffhanger as such, but something that let you know that he was not mucking about. So as Angela is getting jiggy with her husband towards the end, there's a phone call with a mysterious voice that just said, "Big oak tree out on Rolling Hill, something you need to see there. I know who you are. Don't wear no goddamn mask." She gets up, she drives there, she sees the old man who we know is Will Reeves, who's played by Louis Gossett Jr. We spotted him outside a bakery earlier with the note, "Watch over this boy in his lap," which I guess means that he was the young boy that we saw at the beginning of the episode, but surely that would make him, well, 100 years old. She gets there, she sees him, and she looks up and sees the body of Judd, her ally, her kind of mentor, hanging from the tree. And there was that great reference to the Watchman logo as a single drop of blood dropped from his body onto his police badge. Proper good ending. There are also those intriguing kind of flashbacks to Jeremy Irons' character, Adrian Veidt. We saw that Veidt officially declared dead was one of the headlines, but it's not true because we see him there. He's riding horseback. These kind of like very strange servants, weren't they, in some kind of like amazing chateau? So that was quite intriguing. And also, an element of whodunit. Who are the people that killed Judd? You know, we saw him leave the house to see the officer who got shot. So clearly it's someone who knows his movements well, knew where he was going to be. Is it an inside job? There were spikes put down on the road that made him go outside. It's all very, very intriguing. Setting us up nicely for episode 2. But seeing as I interviewed Regina King in between episode 1 and episode 2, it's probably best that we just let Regina take over for now, don't you? So here she is, Angela Abar / Sister Knight, the wonderful Regina King. Welcome, welcome, welcome. How the devil are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
Good. This is, what you're saying, the second time in London this year?
Yes, yeah.
That's pretty good going.
Pretty good going, and both times were quite fantastic.
Is it it must be really intense around the launch of such a big show. You must not know where the hell you are at the moment.
Yeah, because I was told, we agreed early on that October was going to be fully dedicated to promoting the show.
Yeah.
And yes, I definitely don't know what date it is. I just, you know, tell me where I'm going.
I can't remember a show, or certainly not for a long, long time, where there's been, I guess, the marketing, it marketed itself really in the fact that there's such a history in terms of the comic, in terms of the Snyder movie, in terms of all that kind of stuff, that the anticipation has been kind of quite intense, but also in classic kind of comic book nerdy kind of way, people don't want to find out really what it's about until no one wants any spoilers.
Right.
So it's been quite cool.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. I mean, you know, there's that concern that comes from having those true fans that have been a fan of the graphic novel for years,
yeah,
that actually list the graphic novel is one of their top 5 favorite books,
yeah,
ever.
Yeah.
You know, like people seriously are, they have a true love and affection for it. So obviously, you know, you want those people to enjoy,
yeah. Yeah.
And be on board. But I thought it was so smart of Damon to write that letter to make it very clear this is not a sequel, this,
yeah,
is,
yeah,
not a remake. And when we went to Comic-Con in New York, and that was the first time the true fans were seeing,
yeah,
the show, 2,000 people got to see the first episode. So, you know, we were holding our breaths for a while. We're backstage, you know, while the screening is going on, you know, talking to each other, just, you know, laughing and being cordial and all that.
This is fine.
But we were all like nervous a bit, you know. And
when you put so much effort into something,
And you believe in it, you know. And we got a standing ovation. I think that kind of released a little bit of the anxiety.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you still have got, you know, quite a few more.
You know, Damon's a smart guy.
He is.
You don't do Lost and The Leftovers and kind of just breeze into something like Watchmen. So the kind of decision, I think, as you said, any kind of, I guess, fears or worries or concerns that any of the kind of diehard fans have, is kind of null and void because it's not a remake and it's not a sequel.
Yes.
But at the same time, it services both level of fans. So it services people that are into the world, the Rorschach world, the Dr. Manhattan world, that understand the kind of legacy about who he is and all that kind of stuff. But also from a pure someone just flicking through, I like Westworld, I like a bit of Game of Thrones, what's my next box set going to be? There's a superhero cop with a black cape that's kicking the living shit out of people.
Yeah.
You know, it works on both levels.
Yeah,
right?
No, 100%, because I am the person that is of the latter group.
Yeah.
That was not familiar with the graphic novel, and that was Damon's intention.
I mean, I tried.
Yeah.
It's a dense kind of book, you know.
I've never been a fan of reading comic books because the reading things in boxes and bubbles with pictures.
I don't know which one to read first.
I don't. And I just never mastered that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was one of the few things I gave up quickly, you know.
And I guess, obviously, one of the smartest things that Damon did was look at what the original Watchmen was trying to say in light of the Cold War, in light of all of the political climate at the time, and go, okay, well, if this was now, what would it be doing? And obviously the alt-right movement is across the whole, is the kind of the heartbeat of the series, or at least it is so far. I'm up to at the end of episode two, so don't spoil it.
I will not.
So that feels like kind of rich pickings. Do you know what I mean? From a script point of view, from a character point of view, it kind of, there's a lot of meat on the bones there, right?
Oh, 100%. I mean, because I did not, again, read the graphic novel when we were shooting the pilot. Damon did not want me to watch the movie or read the book because he felt like character, that is her history, and she only would know that history from what was told or taught, you know, to her. So I didn't have to feel like I needed to know it or understand it by reading it. I could know it or understand it by someone teaching or telling it to me, which is what Damon did. And but I am always shocked to hear people say, well, you know, the original wasn't as political. And I'm like, well, based on what I was taught and told, did you read the first?
Because it kind of was.
Yeah.
I mean, Nixon's been there for five terms or however long it is. And from I want to talk to you a bit about, from a British point of view, I mean, it's still an incredible watch, but obviously there's a whole nother level there from a US point of view for how it kicks off, you know, with the Tulsa Massacre and that level of the Klan and that side of things as well. How's that coming across over there? Because from here we can kind of, I mean, we've got our own problems, but we can sit and watch that and go, yeah, that wasn't us. but over in America, but over in the States, this is still a huge problem, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's so much a part of our history, and it's a part of history that it wasn't taught.
Yeah.
When you were in your U.S. history class.
I had to Google the Tulsa Massacre to find out if that was even a thing.
And you and probably, you know, half of Americans, black and white, had no idea. So there was a lot of, I think, emotion came up just for a lot of black people thinking like, wow, I sat through history classes and that was missed.
Yeah.
You know, and then they would do the dive and find out that there were other moments in history that were similar as far as towns being pillaged, you know,
and the whole lot.
And then for a lot of white people feeling embarrassed as well, and feeling like, wow, what difference would it have made if I as well in history class learned that as a child? Would my regard for race in this country be different now as an adult?
And of course, what it's saying is, you know, if you're thinking, wow, I would never stand for that, Watchmen then goes and says, well, you know, turn around. It's right there. But obviously, you know, you can fill a show full of as much kind of metaphoric kind of material as you want. If it's not entertaining, people aren't going to watch it. Now, let's talk a little bit about Silent Night, because holy crap, she's amazing. How did she come across on page?
She jumped out at me. I've never seen a character like her before, and to think that I was going to have the opportunity to play her was just like, you know, mind blowing. Here we have a woman that represents something that we all understand, and that's switching masks. You change masks depending on your current circumstances, whether it's to adapt, whether it's to protect. We all have a version of that we do. So I felt like, while obviously a black woman, and to tell this story, it has to be a black woman. Part of the telling of the story is her blackness.
The narrative is
right, which is fantastic. That while, you know, as actors, we're black actors, we're so often wanting to do roles that that we are in the character, not just because we're black. We happen to be black, that's not part of the story. In this instance, she had to be black.
It's intrinsic to the whole thing.
I still have the Southland ringtone. Sorry about that.
That's all right. What was your ringtone?
Yeah, Southland, from a show that I did years ago called Southland. The fact that she has to be black, because that is through her eyes we're telling this story. But also, as an actor, that we're celebrating that, and it's a character no one's ever seen before. Just, you know, eat that up. Like, to have an opportunity like that. So that just, I felt like she was relatable in regards to what I said before with the masks and having to change masks, but so familiar to me because it is a black woman, you know.
Are you prepared for you to be Silent Night forever now? I speak to
Sister Night.
Did I say Silent Night? Yeah. Oh my God, sorry, I beg your pardon.
Why you did that? Because we have the White Night that took place on Christmas. Why you got there. Yeah, that's a pass.
Because I did a show for Game of Thrones, and every time I kind of spoke to the cast over the years, kind of like saw them gradually realize that this is it now. Once you're a fan favorite in a kind of in an HBO blockbuster, that's it now. You will forever be kind of like
known as that, a Sister Night.
Yeah. Are you ready for seeing kind of kids going to Comic Con with the black stripe across the face?
Oh, yes.
Because that's a cool costume.
That is absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
What have we got in store? So in the UK, we are, by the time this goes out, we'll be up to episode 2. We will have seen, I guess, you meet a kind of curious character in a wheelchair, or a kind of an elderly fellow who clearly has some kind of mysterious connection to you.
Yes.
And we get our first glimpse, I guess, that Damon has got quite a few switcheroos up his sleeve in terms of who these characters really are, what their background is and stuff like that. What can you give away without giving anything away about what we've got in store over the next, what, 7 or 8 weeks?
That is so tough. That is so tough to try to give you a nugget without it being a spoiler.
I've just watched the season finale. How am I feeling?
You're feeling like, what? No.
Perfect.
Is she?
That's perfect. Yeah. That's what we want. That's what we want. I guess you guys are all gearing up for now for a few more. Do you know what's happening?
I think right now it's a taking a pause, yeah, and just seeing how being received.
Yeah.
So far, so good, in my opinion, because I know the entire story and I know what's to come. I feel like if we're starting strong like this, I feel like it's going to get better. Mm-hmm.
Did Damon sell you the whole arc?
No. I didn't get a lot of things until they came. A couple things I got ahead of time because they needed to be sprinkled in, in earlier episodes. So he totally has planted, maybe this is a little something that's not a spoiler, has planted things that you definitely will have to go back and watch.
Nice.
And when you go back and watch, you'll go, oh my God,
a little
yes,
bit of foreshadowing.
That happened.
That's
yeah.
What we want. That's
yeah.
What we want. Are we going to start seeing, it's a bit of a Lindelof kind of trademark in as much as that we'll have episodes that focus specifically on one or two characters, mm-hmm, and start delving into that story.
100%. Yep, okay. That's going to happen. Yes. Well, it'll happen. Okay, I can probably give you something there. It'll happen with 4 characters for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you get around filming such a secretive show? You know, you don't want anyone to find out what's going on. So when you're on set, is it called something else? How do you get around?
I'm actually amazed because I really
are you bad at keeping secrets?
I know I'm great at keeping secrets, but I don't really understand the NDAs. I'm like, really? People really honor those? Like, what?
You and me both. I've signed so many of those things.
Like, what?
No one's ever come chasing.
Right.
I've got a right big mouth.
but HBO is definitely, they have been great, you know, in shows prior to Watchmen.
I've worked for HBO. They're terrifying.
You're feeling like at any moment someone's going to jump out of someplace.
Laser dots start appearing.
Yeah.
You get too close to Kit Harington, you get taken
right.
down.
Right. Yeah. Really? I mean, you know, but I just they know how to contain things.
Yeah.
And so they've done such a great job. So I just follow their lead. I don't say shit about shit. You know, I like my job. I like my life.
Yeah.
I want to continue working with them.
You don't want to be the one. Have you heard of the Great British Bake Off?
No.
So there's a big baking show in the UK. It's like a huge, it's like a big deal. It's like our Americans Got Talent. It's mm-hmm. like a massive thing. But it's basically just a lot of very gentle people making a cake every single week and they get knocked out. Anyway, it builds up to this huge kind of finale. And the judge was abroad at the time. So it's all pre-recorded. The judge was abroad. The whole of the nation were sat in front of the television waiting for the final to start. She got the time zones wrong and tweeted out congratulations to the
no.
winner. Destroyed it for 40, destroyed it for kind of like 10 minutes. And she was obviously completely distraught.
She was sick.
Yeah, yeah. So that's it's best just not to know, right?
Just don't say anything. Yeah. Just don't say anything at all. And just say, I'm not saying anything at all.
What were the sets like? Because I was watching, you know, a lot of it's shot on location. Mm. I think particularly in episode 2, there was a great kind of sprawling kind of shot of like the police cars mm-hmm. with the kind of from a certain crime scene by a tree. Mm-hmm. Was most of it shot in set? Was there a lot of green screen done, or was it mostly?
We did have a significant amount of green or blue screen. We had a lot of big sets that you'll see to come.
Yeah.
Well, you've seen the police station.
Yeah,
which that's quite. It was amazing to be there. And that is a 2-story set, actually. But we have some more sets that are quite magnificent that were built. The production design and art department.
I must say, your X-ray specs, the goggles that
you
used.
Isn't that really cool? The props, yeah, props to my property team designed that. So,
were you a big superhero kind of fan in general? Was it anything that had been on your radar?
Yeah, I would say that I am.
Because they get a lot of shit now, I think. You know, Scorsese and kind of Coppola and stuff have kind of started laying
into it. Yeah, but whatever. I mean, I think Sam Jackson answered that best. You know, some people don't like their stuff. So, you know, it's opinion, you know. They're entitled to
it. Never mess around with Sam Jackson's films, for goodness sake.
I mean, Sam, he will tell it like it is.
He did. He scares me to death. I've interviewed him a few times. Very scary man. He doesn't take anything. Listen, thank you so much. I can't wait to see what you've got in store for us, and I can't wait to speak to you next time around.
Oh, ditto, ditto. And I like that you put that in the universe, next time around.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to Previously On, Watchmen, in association with Sky Atlantic. You can watch Watchmen exclusively on Sky Atlantic every single Monday at 9 p.m. But don't panic if you've missed it, because each episode goes straight up on demand as soon as it's aired. For more information, hop over to sky.com. So since that chat, episode 2 has aired, and what a doozy it was. What a doozy it was. Should we go back there? In case you missed it, allow me to talk you through it. The episode was called Martial Feats of Comanche Horsemanship. Think that's how you say that. And it was very much an episode that blurred the lines between the goodies and the baddies, didn't it? There was a good old switcheroo from Damon Lindelof. It was to show that not everyone that's good is all good, and not everyone was bad is all, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we saw, again, a flashback, this time to World War One, and another example of racial injustice just being swept under the carpet somewhat by history. There was a propaganda pamphlet pocketed by a black soldier, which was later scribbled on during the Tulsa race massacre. Again, please look after this boy. The same pamphlet that we saw carried by the mysterious gentleman in the wheelchair, one who introduces himself as Will. We join Will and Angela on top of the hill, where the swinging body of Judd is still there. Angela quickly kind of takes him into custody. She's clearly shaken. We see her screaming, and Will isn't being particularly good at providing any form of straight answers. He keeps giving the same kind of answer. What was it he kept saying? I'm the one who strung up your chief of police, telling her off for cursing too much, almost sounding a little bit paternal. He insinuated that he had telekinetic powers. He even then said he might be Dr. Manhattan. But it was interesting that Dr. Manhattan got a lot of discussion in this episode, maybe teeing him up to making an entrance at some point, which would be amazing. It was interesting that we kept getting told a couple of times that whilst Dr. Manhattan is a superhero and is living on Mars and has extraordinary powers, he can't do absolutely everything. You know, we were told about weaknesses. I think there was something about changing things on a molecular level or that kind of stuff. But I found it quite maybe a bit of foreshadowing that maybe there are a few weak spots in Dr. Manhattan's powers. But clearly, Will, the old man, is not Dr. Manhattan. But then tells Angela quite strangely that Judd had a few skeletons in his closet. Angela quite rightly took that statement quite literally and used these amazing cool night vision goggles to have a bit of a snoop around in Judd's bedroom, where she found in a hidden part of his wardrobe, who the hell has those, a Ku Klux Klan outfit, which has kind of shocked her. Judd was supposed to be her mentor and ally, and is this a plant, or was he on the other side as well? But because of Judd's murder, there is huge tension among kind of police versus the locals. There's a big standoff at a trailer park where ended up being a riot in which everybody kind of loses a temper, including Angela, who kind of takes out her frustrations at the death of Judd on a stranger. Looking Glass, who I'm liking Looking Glass actually, is taken no prisoners, and even kind of seems to suspect Angela and was asking her questions about her place on the night of the murder, asking about her foster children, and hinting that biological parents of the children aren't happy that Angela has got custody of them. But one of my favourite parts of the whole episode, and one that really kind of opens up, I guess, the more comic book elements wide, is Adrian Veidt. We go over where he's staging his birthday play. This is quite an interesting point. So we saw the headlines previously saying that Adrian Veidt is dead. And we saw, I believe, in the previous episode, Jeremy Irons' character as Adrian celebrating the 7th anniversary. So it would mean that the 7th anniversary, I think, of Ozymandias' disappearance. Now, Ozymandias is the hero that Adrian Veidt became in Watchmen. So that's quite telling. And that he does that great play with John and Janie, his weird butlers. And as we discover, in some kind of nod to The Prestige, that Adrian Veidt has been cloning these two, this man and this woman. There are multiples of them all over everywhere. We see one of them painted as Dr. Manhattan, as he's resurrected in a kind of depiction of Dr. Manhattan's creation. That's what that play was. That was a true depiction of how Dr. Manhattan was created. And he's clearly got a bit of a beef with old Dr. Manhattan, who, as we keep getting told, is on Mars. The last thing that Dr. Manhattan ever said to Adrian was, "Nothing ever ends," and he keeps getting people to repeat that to him. All of this, I'm sure, is part of Lindelof's plan and will all come to fruition at some point. We then cross back over as Angela did some DNA testing on the coffee cup that Will had a drink with, and this is an amazing kind of future. You can just take a coffee cup into a room and they phone you up and tell you who your ancestors are. It's like a 2060 version of who do they think they are. So we do find out that Angela is indeed Will's granddaughter, and he certainly knows about that already. This makes Angela angry. She's still mourning Judd's death, and she's obviously a bit confused as to why someone who's just been identified as her grandfather was owning up to murdering Judd. Just as she's about to take him in for questioning and take things down the official route, out of the night sky comes what looked like a UFO, but with a massive magnet on it. It's maybe similar to the Owl ship that Judd flew in the first episode. Whacked a magnet on top of the car, and with a big, big old smile from Will, flew away into the night sky. So it ended on a big old, "What the hell was that?" but in the best possible way. Cannot wait for episode 3. Should we have a listen to the trailer? You can have a listen to it, and I'll describe what I've seen in case you haven't watched it. Here it goes.
Are you ready to venture into the great beyond?
Look on my works, ye mighty in despair.
I promise to defend us from all enemies, foreign and domestic.
We should be prepared.
What are you guys up to? Who the fuck are you?
Special Agent Lori Blake. Who the fuck are you?
God snaps his fingers, and the hero goes to hell.
Right, that is one hell of an intriguing promo. So we go right back at the beginning. Let me just skip through this frame by frame, because that's the best way of doing it. So we see, again, some form of reenaction from Adrian Veidt. The clones are dressed up in some kind of, looks like a knight's outfit, almost like a medieval knight's outfit. Then we cross over to a private jet, looks like some governmental kind of jet, with someone leaning out, looking out of the window onto the horizon at what looks to be some kind of huge machine, which reminded me very much of one of the great films, The Contact, with Jodie Foster. Do you remember that big transportation device that was built on there? So I'm wondering if that's a similar kind of thing. That's clearly going to play a big part in coming episodes. We then crossed over to the funeral of Judd. We see a lot of people, a lot of mourners, a lot of police in their yellow masks on, giving a 12-gun salute to the fallen hero, or is he? We then see glimpses of people testing out some suicide vests. There are people coming out of the pod. There's also what appears to be, I would imagine, under-the-radar interrogations of suspects carrying on, and then the arrival of somebody who does not look like good news at all.
I'm going to say, some kind of internal investigations. One called Laurie King tips up. We then cross outside a place called the Iberian Pig, which I'm guessing is a pub, and a strange kind of blue device, which may or may not be a phone box that Laurie King is using to speak to somebody. Angela appears out of a hole in the ground wearing those amazing night vision goggles. Yes, please, I would like a pair of them. We see Laurie and Looking Glass inside the pod, staring at the Rorschach kind of symbols that are cropping up. That is kind of all that we get from that. So it looks like there's a new sheriff in town. Someone's obviously come in to replace Judd, and they want to play a different game. It's going to be great. Thanks very much for listening. Hope it's been helpful. Don't forget, Watchmen is available exclusively on Sky Atlantic each Monday at 9 p.m. If you've missed any of the episodes so far, do not panic. Don't panic. They've got it covered. Each episode of Watchmen goes straight up on demand as soon as it finishes airing on the Monday night. So they're all there, all ready for you to get stuck into. For more information about Watchmen, or indeed any of the other awesome shows that Sky Atlantic got going on right now, just head over to sky.com. If you've enjoyed Previously On, do us a favour, give us a cheeky little 5-star review, tell all your friends, particularly if there's someone maybe in your household that needs to get up to speed with Watchmen, so that you can enjoy it together. Maybe this podcast would be quite useful for them. If you're new to Previously On, you might want to go back and check out some of our previous episodes. We've covered recaps of a hell of a lot of series already. There's every single episode of Game of Thrones. We've done Peaky Blinders, Stranger Things. We've done Big Little Lies, and there's loads more of them to come. If you've got any suggestions, just get in touch. We're over on Twitter at Previous Podcast. We will see you next time. Until then, you've been listening to Previously On in association with Sky Atlantic.